We start today's program with a look at Election Day in Arizona and some interesting polling data with some Democratic heavy hitters like Bernie Sanders and First Lady Michelle Obama in Arizona this week. It's clear the Hillary Clinton campaign thinks it has a pretty good chance to win here. Valley-based High Ground Public Affairs released the results of a poll earlier this week that has Clinton ahead of Donald Trump, 38.5% to 36.5%. With me to talk about that and some other poll numbers is Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so Clinton is ahead in Maricopa and Pima counties, behind significantly in rural Arizona. First of all, before we parse some of these numbers, are you surprised, based on the knowledge you have of how the electorate in Arizona works?
No, I think it would surprise a lot of people that look at Arizona from outside and look at it as a traditionally red state, which it is, and will largely continue to be so. But the Trump campaign has, its cornerstone, one of the cornerstone issues, as you know, has been talked about as immigration. Arizona voters have a much more, we've been baptized in this issue for well over a decade. The rhetoric that the Trump campaign talks about simply building the wall, has been used out here for a long time. And, we have a great cultural and historical tradition with Mexico. It's our largest trading partner as a state. People here recognize we don't need a wall. We need a functioning, secure border that promotes trade and economic opportunity, which includes reforming the immigration system. We have two senior senators that have supported immigration reform, and that's one of the biggest issues on the federal radar screen for Arizona voters. So he's out of step there. He's out of step on trade issues with most Arizona voters as well. And then, he's out of step on some cultural conservative issues with parts of the electorate. We saw the tape last week and or heard it, and that I think doesn't sit well with a lot of cultural conservatives who seem to be underperforming for him while still performing for Senator McCain.
So as a longtime strategist, if you were on the Clinton team, is it okay with your campaign when maybe a lot of the electorate is against your opponent rather than for you? Can you use that to your advantage, or is there inherent risk in that?
There is risk in it. From a strictly campaign perspective, it's great. You just sort of sit back and watch the implosion. From a governing perspective, it becomes very troublesome because, what you hope to use campaigns for, candidates that I enjoy working for use campaigns to establish governing agendas. And that's what you use that electoral momentum to create unity within the country. That's the essence of what a good campaign should do. And so it's interesting to see now that with Senator Sanders' vote visit yesterday, talking about issues about dark money, talking about issues about immigration, talking about issues about trade, talking about issues with regards to school, higher education and affordability. Those are all issues which, you can build electoral coalitions around in Arizona. It'll be interesting to see what the First Lady says. And of course, Chelsea is going to go apparently to Tempe, which, is a traditionally one of the more moderate to liberal communities in Maricopa County. It's the home of Arizona State University, as you know, and traditionally leans a little left of center compared to other Valley cities.
Chuck, as you alluded to, Senator McCain came out much better in this poll than Donald Trump did, leading Andrew Kirkpatrick by a double-digit lead there. Mm-hmm. Where is Senator McCain at this point? It seemed that there was a thought that Ann Kirkpatrick, because she was certainly the most high-profile Democratic candidate he's faced in a very long time, being an incumbent representative, that this might turn out differently. But has John McCain been able to separate himself in the sense that both he and Donald Trump have ridiculously high name recognition? Has he been able to make it so he is, if people are judging him, they're judging him on John McCain as opposed to Donald Trump / John McCain?
Correct. I first came out here, full disclosure, to work for the senator in his first Senate campaign in 1985. I think he still claims that was his largest mistake in life. But, he's been around. I mean, he's a known quantity on the stage. His name ID, as you alluded to, is practically 99%. And people associate certain positions with him. I think from a national security perspective, as his campaign's been talking about, everybody is on edge as to where the world's security situation is. They feel comfortable with John's leadership as chairman of the Armed Services Committee in that capacity. They may disagree with him on issues. They may have challenges with him and his long tenure as voters have with Hillary being on the stage for 30 years. But I think Arizona voters know him, and as you say, Congresswoman Kirkpatrick, probably the best opponent he's had, but she's had the burden of never having really run in Maricopa County or Pima County, the two largest electoral bases in the state. She represents a legislative district, CD1, which is larger than most eastern states, but doesn't encompass any of the large population centers. So she had a name ID problem to begin with, and the senator used a lot of resources to define her for everybody else, and she suffered from that, I think.
Chuck, one thing that came out after your poll was conducted was the comments that Senator McCain made about potentially blocking Supreme Court nominees by Hillary Clinton, and that doesn't sound like the moderate independent John McCain that a lot of people like.
Yeah, I saw that as well, and I saw the campaign sort of walk that back a little bit right after that. It surprised me. I got a few calls from other people about that. You'd think that would be the more advising consent role. And if a person's qualified, you vote them up and down. And so it was surprising, and I think it's an issue that Congresswoman Kirkpatrick's campaign has picked up on and started to bang him on, and that's why I thought some of those comments were walked back by his team yesterday.
Chuck, we've got about 90 seconds left. Let's go to the propositions 205 and 206. Recreational marijuana, based on your poll, looks like it's a tight one, whereas minimum wage was winning by quite a bit. How do you interpret those?
It's interesting. Both issues have, as the electorate ages, particularly on the marijuana issue, there's experiential. It was getting trounced with voters 65 and older. I think the number on 65 and older was, it was losing by 45 points. With younger voters, it was up 46. With voters, 30 to 39, it was up 15. With voters 26, and then 50 to 64, it was tied. So is younger voters definitely more apt to be supportive of that. So it's an interesting thing to see if there will be an effect with the Clinton push out here to turn out younger voters. And Steve, I should mention too, none of this data takes into account the massive registration drive that the Democrats have engaged in out here. So we poll voters, we talk to voters, we call the voter roll. It's 2 out of 3 in terms of participation. And so we know we're talking to voters. We don't talk to them because they don't have an experience of voting. So, again, based on registration, that could make a difference in a close race with both the twin efforts with the Democratic push and then with the registration drive. The minimum wage looks like it's going to cruise to victory. We've talked a long time in the last 5 to 10 years on wage inequality in this country, and I think it's baked into the electorate. It's a very difficult argument for the business community to make that, you don't work in a 40-hour week and make a livable wage. And so it seems to be a fairly fixed opinion amongst most of the electorate.
Chuck Coughlin is president and CEO of High Ground, also a longtime political consultant. We've been talking about some of their latest polling data. And Chuck, thanks for checking in.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having us on.
This is KJZZ's Here and Now in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Tonight will be the third and final presidential debate of this campaign season between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. The first two have been eventful, but many would argue that's not because of disagreements over issues like the economy or foreign policy. So what should we expect for tonight in the Las Vegas debate? With me to talk about that and broader campaign issues is ASU political scientist Rudy Espino. Rudy, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Do you consider in any way the Las Vegas setting to be significant at all tonight? Nevada in the past has been a little bit of a swing state, or is this just sort of, this is where they decided to hold the debate?
Yes and no, to answer your question directly. And the reason I say yes is if you, broad demographics were trending to be like Nevada in the sense that we have a significant growing Latino population, but no in the sense that we also have a much more conservative wider population than does Nevada, and that is where this is what makes Arizona a coin toss. But if you've been paying attention to recent polling data, Arizona has been pushed into a potential battleground state, which is what some political forecasters predicted would happen either in 2016 or 2020 based on our demographic trends. So issues with respect to Latino voters, specifically immigration reform, if they come up tonight, might be relevant in making Arizona more of a battleground state. Other things to consider is you look at the Clinton campaign and what they're eyeing in terms of their internal polling suggests that they do consider Arizona up for grabs, given the fact that they're sending really high-level, high-profile surrogates such as Bernie Sanders, Michelle Obama, Chelsea Clinton here to Arizona post-debate.
You mentioned the demographic trends, which is interesting because, as you said, people have been wondering when those trends, particularly the growth of Latino registered voters, would have an impact. Do you think it's possible that timeline was moved up because of Donald Trump? I mean, could it have been 2020 with a more, let's say, a more common Republican nominee?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's play the counterfactual. Had it been Jeb Bush, it would have been pushed back probably to 2020. But because of some of the statements that Trump has made, not just about women, but with respect to African Americans, and then specifically with respect to Mexico and Mexican Americans, that has pushed the timeline a little bit forward, in my opinion.
So we always hate to bring up Latino voters as some kind of monolith. Rudy, what sort of impact do you think Latino voters will have at the presidential level, specifically in Arizona? And do you think that will carry down to specifically the Maricopa County Sheriff's race, for example?
Yes, it could. Latino voters have been paying attention to this election for well over the past year because the statements that Trump has made about Hispanic Americans and Mexico in particular well precede him securing the nomination. And this goes back to this summer of 2015, the statements that he's made. And Latino voters and particularly Latino activists have been cognizant of this and have been constantly reminding Latino voters of this issue. And priming Latino voters, you better get registered, you better get registered, you better turn out. And then with respect to down the ticket offices, I mean, Arizona is not the only one that where Republicans are concerned about the effect that Trump is having on down the ticket races. But in Maricopa County, there's the big name recognition, Arpaio versus Pinzon. Frankly, one of the greatest predictors of who's going to win is cash on hand, and Arpaio does have more cash on hand and backing and name recognition than does Pinzon. You might see enthusiasm of Latino voters going to support Pinzon, but frankly, I just think it's not quite there yet, and that Arpaio has been associating himself with Trump, but I don't think the demographic trends here in Maricopa County have shifted quite in the favor of an opponent of Pario just yet.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. A few more minutes left with ASU political scientist Rudy Espino. Rudy, let's focus a little bit more on tonight's debate. As you mentioned earlier, there's been so much focus on what Donald Trump has said about women, what he specifically said about women 11 years ago in that Access Hollywood interview. How much of the focus, I think there are a lot of our listeners who would like to hear plans. They'd like to hear, is there a specific economic plan? Is there a specific foreign policy plan that sounds viable? Do you think we're going to hear that, or do you think most of it will be spent on character assassination on both sides?
Well, I think the moderator, Chris Wallace, is probably being directed by the commission that directs these debates to, this is what voters want to hear. They're tired of the character assassinations. But frankly, given what we've seen in the previous two debates, I don't anticipate how quickly either one of those candidates will quickly pivot to a character assassination. What we're hearing is that Trump is being told to focus on policy because that's what the voters want to hear. But given what we've seen him, how quickly he deviates from directions, I don't see that happening. And Clinton's camp is just going to, try to just be respectful and polite and continue to let Trump sink himself as their strategy. I do think that with respect to tonight's debate, I think that there's been some discussion and discourse out there that the American public is turned off by the lack of attention on policy, but they're also, frankly, turned on by entertainment. And the first two debates have been entertaining in a bad way in some ways. But I do think because of those first debates that the ratings for tonight's debate will be extremely high because we're just interested in how Trump is going to react and respond and deviate from the advisable script.
And political observers would say that we've already seen, whether it's Donald Trump's comments about women or the concern among some about Hillary Clinton's email situation, and as we mentioned, both sides are sort of hitting those quite hard. When you look forward and look ahead at this, is this going to be a case where we've seen as much dirt as we possibly can, it's as low as it can go, or in the last couple of weeks, could we see it get worse?
I would think that it's probably going to get worse. With campaigns, you know, they'll sit on some money and do some last minute buys of advertising, and Trump's statements and his behavior in the past suggest that he's going to go all out, and does suggest that there is cash on hand, that he plans to do a lot of last minute ad buys that are going to go negative. And because he's desperate and negative, we do know that in political science research that negative advertising does work, despite the fact that American publics do get turned off on it. But the reason it's effective is that it grabs our attention. And there's the media effect with this too. Is post debate, how is the media going to be spinning this? Because you have your handlers that will be analyzing the debate and the performance of each of the candidates. And that is a significant factor to consider. And this is something that the Trump camp has been critical of, is that the fact that they believe that there is a significant bias against the Trump camp, and the fact that they believe that they won debates, and the media then says comes in and spins it the opposite direction according to them. So, what's interesting, Chris Wallace, Fox News, is considered to be a conservative-leaning outlet. I have a feeling that even if Trump loses tonight, they will now go after Fox News if the media spins it that way. And bring it back to Arizona, a significant thing is endorsements and media. And the Arizona Republic has been criticized for not endorsing Trump, as you know. And they had to come out in defense of why they do not consider Trump a conservative candidate that represents conservative values. So that's an important thing. It's not just the debate itself, but the narrative that comes after the debate.
Right, a lot to watch tonight and the aftermath. ASU political scientist Rudy Espino. Rudy, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.